I want to ask everybody a question, and that's this one. What matters most in your life? I'm seriously asking. What matters most in your life? I'm guessing it's not your car. It's not your clothes. It's probably not even your house. What matters most? Okay. Your health? Your family? Your connections? Well, what if I were to say to you that you were going to lose everyone and everything that ever mattered to you? I don't mean that you're gone or that they're gone, but what I mean is that your connection with them is broken forever. I want to show you what I mean. This is Irene and Walter. Those are my grandparents, my mother's parents. And they lived in the Midwest, and Walter was the local physician, and this was before the days of health insurance. So he would treat a patient, and they might pay him with a chicken or a side of beef. Not the healthiest lifestyle necessarily. When Walter was 60, he had a heart attack, and he had always seemingly been very healthy. But pretty soon after that, it was clear that there was something seriously wrong with him. He started to become forgetful, and sometimes he would wander out of the house without knowing where he was going, and by the time he was 65, he was dead. And my grandmother, Irene, lived a lot longer. But for the last 10 years of her life, she sat in the corner of a nursing home, not knowing anybody, including her own children, who would come and see her. My father's side of the family raised cattle. And it wasn't necessarily the healthiest lifestyle, but they lived long lives, but both of them had the same fate, that it started out with repeating the same old stories, and they finally just slipped into not knowing anything or anyone. And their hearts were beating, but their minds were totally gone, day after day, year after year after year. And this is my dad. My dad grew up in the cattle business, did not like it very much, and left, and he went and was in the military for a while, and then he went to medical school, and he spent his life treating diabetes in Fargo, North Dakota. Anybody been there? Have you seen the movie? Okay, well, anyhow, when Dad was in his late 60s, he said to me, "It's happening to me." And he started to notice that his memory was not so good. And as time went on, it got worse and worse and worse, and then his personality started to change. And when my dad died last year, it was as if he had started to die 10 years before that. And it's not just my family. All of us know people where this has happened. And Alzheimer's attacks half of us by age 85. If you look at the numbers, they're frightening. 5 million people now, and that number is going to triple in the next couple of decades. Well, you sit down with your doctor and you say, "What's this all about?" And your doctor might explain it can start with just a lapse. You can be 25 years old, you can have a memory lapse. You go into the grocery store and you see somebody there, what's their name? And you sort of go into the other aisle hoping that they don't see you until you think that their name is. And of course, there's somebody there you ought to know. But if we're not sleeping well or under stress, we can have lapses, but if they become more frequent, we call it mild cognitive impairment. This is a person who's maybe a little up in years, but you're still driving, you're managing your own checkbook, but you're having lapses on a daily basis, and you're worried about it. And then if learning and remembering start to be trouble, and then reasoning, problem solving aren't so good, and visual spatial ability. This is, I'll ask you to draw a clock. And can you get the numbers and the hands in the right position? That's visual spatial ability. Fourth is language, and fifth is personality. If all five of these things are starting to have trouble, that's when doctors say, "I think we need to have a talk about Alzheimer's disease." And you'll say, "Well, I don't want Alzheimer's disease. I have seen it. Give me any disease that you have other than that one, because I don't want it." And the doctor will say, "I'm sorry. There's a gene. It's genetic. And the gene is called the ApoE epsilon 4 allele. If you got it from one parent, you have 3 times the risk. If you got it from both parents, 10 to 15 times the risk. What can you do? Get different parents." No, well, that's not going to work out very well. Well, I want to share with you a whole new approach to this that suggests that genes are not destiny. There's an awful lot that we can do to change things. I want to show you how the brain remembers things, what goes wrong with it, and how we can turn things around. Okay, this is the brain, and right in the middle of the brain is this organ. Centuries ago, some anatomists thought that looks sort of like a seahorse. They were apparently imaginative anatomists, but they said that looks like a seahorse, so they gave it the Latin name, which is hippocampus, seahorse. That is the center of memory. It has the job of deciding what's worth remembering. So if it is, it's stored. If it's not, the hippocampus lets it go. So I'm at a restaurant, and the waiter comes up and says, "Hi, my name's Kelly. I'll be your waiter tonight." And the hippocampus goes, "No, I don't think so." But things that do need to be remembered, the hippocampus will send them up into the cerebral hemispheres where they are stored. Now, you don't get a new brain cell for every memory because your brain would be so big you'd carry it around in a wheelbarrow. But what you do is you make new connections between cells, synapses, and you get more and more connections between cells, and that's how memories are stored. Well, if you look inside the brain, you see something that's not so good. Between these perfectly normal brain cells are these brown blobs. Well, what is this? This is a brain cell, and you see the connections running off, but out of that brain cell oozes protein. This happens in all our brains. We're having protein coming out. It's called amyloid protein. That's normal. However, it can collect in these sort of balls of yarn or little meatballs that are called beta amyloid plaques. Plaque is just a generic word for a collection. Your dentist might say, "There's a little plaque on your teeth." Or a cardiologist might say, "Well, I'm looking for plaque in your arteries." It just means buildup. These are in the brain. And they come from protein that's oozing out of cells, sort of like an old sausage maker, cranking it out. And as it comes out, it gets snipped off and it collects in these little meatballs. And that is not normal. Back in the early 1900s, Dr. Alzheimer said, "What is that?" And they named a disease after him. Now, what is this? That's Chicago. In 1993, a study got started called the Chicago Health and Aging Project, and all they did was interview thousands of people about what they ate. And then they looked at who stayed clear, mentally clear, and who didn't. And the first food that they keyed in on was something I knew about. When I was a kid, growing up in Fargo, I would wake up to the smell of bacon. And I would run down to the kitchen, and all five of my mom's kids would be down there, and my mother would be taking a fork, and she would put it into the frying pan, and she would take the bacon strips out and put them on a paper towel to cool down. And then that hot bacon grease, you don't throw that away. That's good bacon grease. So my mother would carefully pick up the hot pan and pour it into a jar to save it. And it didn't go in the refrigerator. It just went on the shelf. Because my mother knew that when bacon grease cools down, what happens to it? It solidifies, right? Well, the fact that it's solid at room temperature is a sign that it's loaded with saturated fat. That's bad fat. And the next day, she would spoon it back into the frying pan and fry eggs in it. It's amazing any of her children lived to adulthood, I have to say. But that's the way we ate. So saturated fat is bad fat. Saturated fat, dairy products are the biggest source, but it's also in meat and eggs and a few other things. Some people in Chicago eat these things. And the low saturated fat group ate about 13 grams of it a day. The high group, 25 grams. So the researchers said, do they differ in their Alzheimer's risk? I want to show you the numbers. Okay, so are you with me? The people who ate the most saturated fat had three times the risk, or more than three times the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Well, good heavens, how does that add up? Two eggs, that's 3 grams. One strip of bacon, that's another gram. Do you know anyone who has one strip of bacon, by the way? A chicken thigh, even without the skin, that's 4.5 grams. A glass of whole milk, another 4.5. Pizza for one is 12. And I'm going to add that up. I'm in the high-risk group. Do you know anyone who eats those foods? Everybody eats those foods. And it showed that we were at high risk. But it's not just Alzheimer's disease. Do you remember that condition that precedes it, where you might be 55 years old, but you're having some trouble remembering things, this mild cognitive impairment? Researchers in Finland looked at mild cognitive impairment. Large group of people, 50 years old, and they tracked them for the next 21 years. And some people ate relatively little saturated fat, less than 21.6 grams. Others were higher, and they looked at the numbers. Bingo, exactly the same story. So it's not just Alzheimer's. It's a question of sort of just forgetfulness in later life that might be linked to bacon, dairy products, eggs, foods high in saturated fat. Well, wait a minute. I knew it was bad for my heart. Could it be bad for my brain? Well, what about that gene, that ApoE epsilon 4 allele? Some people in Finland had that. So they then redid the study looking just at those people, just the people who had that gene. Some of them were low in fat, some of them had a high fat diet, but look, if you avoided saturated fat, your risk of developing memory problems was cut by, that's about 80%. Genes are not destiny. There are genes that are dictator genes. The genes for blue eyes. They say blue eyes, and you know what, that's an order. You're going to have blue eyes. You can't fight with them. But the genes for Alzheimer's disease are more like committees. They make suggestions. And you can say, well, I don't really think I'm going to eat my bacon today. And I'm going to change my diet dramatically. And you can say no to those genes. Did you know there are genes for diabetes, genes for cancer? In most cases, they are committees. And the ability to control gene expression through simple changes that we make from day to day is one of the most exciting areas in medicine and health right now. It's not just a set of blueprints that our body follows. These are things that we can change. Oh, what's that? There's fat in there too. What is the fat in a donut? What's the fat that's in donuts and snack pastries? Anybody know? Trans fats, that's right, trans fats. Some people in Chicago eat donuts. Some people don't eat very much, fairly low. Some people high. Let's run those numbers. I want to show you. Even worse than the saturated fat. So when these numbers came out, I got to tell you, doctors were horrified because they said, people eat dairy products, they eat cheese, they eat meat, they eat donuts all the time. We are going to have an epidemic of Alzheimer's disease, and you know what? We are. We're in the middle of it right now. When I saw these numbers, I was thrilled. Because you can decide what's your diet and the diet of your family. And suddenly, in an area where we had absolutely no control and we thought it was all genetic, all written on your blueprints before you were born, suddenly we've got the beginnings of tools. But these are just the first two. There's much more than that. But why? Why would these fats affect the brain? Well, researchers at Kaiser Permanente had an interesting thought. It could be cholesterol. Because if I eat the bad fats, it raises my cholesterol, right? Maybe the cholesterol is affecting the brain. So they did a study. They brought in a large group of people, almost 10,000. And everybody got their cholesterol tested. These were the people with the lower cholesterol. And this was their Alzheimer's risk. Higher cholesterol, higher risk. Higher cholesterol still, and even higher risk. And the people with the highest cholesterol levels had a much higher risk of developing Alzheimer's. Apparently, cholesterol influences the production of those amyloid strands. And it also turns out that gene, that ApoE epsilon 4 allele, it doesn't cause Alzheimer's. What it causes is your body to make a protein that carries cholesterol in the blood and in the brain like a little butter knife that takes that cholesterol and spackles it where it doesn't belong. What if I have the gene but I don't eat cholesterol? What if I change my diet so that I maintain a very, very low cholesterol level? I'm changing my biochemistry with simple changes. All right, so I live in Chicago, I'm at high risk, I'm eating all these things, can I change? Can I? What can I change? Can I get rid of something there? Let's say I want to get rid of that glass of milk. Who's had almond milk? How's it taste? Is it good? Okay. Happens to have zero cholesterol, zero saturated fat. So I'm going to get rid of this one, bring in the almond milk, rerun my numbers. I'm doing better. If the research numbers in Chicago apply to me, I've cut a lot of saturated fat. My risk is dropping. Can I get rid of more things? What can I get rid of? Bacon? Okay. Away goes the bacon. There's veggie bacon. It's sort of a liberal interpretation of the original. It'll make an okay BLT. Can I get rid of some more stuff? What can I get rid of? Eggs? Out they go. We'll have some oatmeal with blueberries and strawberries. I'm getting rid of that chicken thigh, too. I'm going to have a vegetable sandwich. Let's rerun our numbers. I'm doing better. Okay. What else can I get rid of? Anything? What? Pizza? Can I get a pizza? Can I get a cheeseless pizza? Is that possible? Can I get a pizza with no cheese? All right, here, let's see. There it goes. All right, there's my vegan pizza. Let's see how I do. Well, I don't know, because nobody in Chicago eats that well. Well, it turns out there are some places where people eat that well. Loma Linda, California is an interesting place. It's about an hour east of Los Angeles. And when I started my work in research, I couldn't figure out why researchers always go to Loma Linda. Why are they there? What are they doing there? Well, I finally figured it out. Loma Linda is where many Seventh-day Adventists live. And the church says you are not supposed to smoke or drink alcohol or use caffeine or eat meat. And almost all Adventists are really good at the first three. But what that means is you've got a huge population of non-smoking, non-drinking, really health-conscious people who vary in diet habits, and that allows you to see how they do. So they looked at the meat-eating Adventists, and they showed that they would develop a little bit of dementia as time went on, and they compared them to the vegetarian Adventists. These might be the cheese-eating vegetarian, but you get the idea. They're doing better. So the idea of getting away from those bad fats is a good idea. But there's something else. There's something else lurking in those plaques. And I want to show you what it is. If I take that and I dissect it, what we discover is, yes, there's beta amyloid protein and there's cholesterol. But there is also some iron and some copper. What's that about? Did you ever hear anybody talk about that in your brain? No. Well, you need a little bit of iron. What do you need iron for? Red blood cells, right? Without it, you're not going to oxygenate your brain. You need some copper for enzyme function. But what if I have a cast iron pan? It's out on my picnic table outside my backyard, and 4 days later, I think, I left it outside, and it rained. What's happened to my cast iron pan? It rusted. That's oxidation. Iron oxidizes in your body, too. And a penny over time oxidizes. It oxidizes in your body. The metals go to the brain, and as they oxidize, they produce free radicals. Free radicals are molecules, mostly oxygen, that you've inhaled, but that have become unstable because of the oxidizing metals. They lose an electron, they become unstable, and they're like sparks that want to just singe through the connections between cells. Are you with me? Okay. So, where am I getting all these metals? You need some, but the problem is this. If you get too much, the fact that these metals really are double-edged swords becomes very obvious. How many people have a cast iron pan? If you're using it once a month, who cares? But if it's every day, the iron is getting into your foods more than you need. Copper pipes, okay? Meats, liver, loaded with both iron and copper. One-a-day vitamins are interesting. Like all brands of vitamins, they want to sell you their product. And the vitamins themselves are good. But they know you're more likely to buy it if they say, we've got everything you need. We're throwing some iron. We'll throw in copper. And you say, wait. I'm getting that in food. You're overdosing me. Well, that's exactly, read the label. That's what you'll see. They have figured this out with iron. For people over 50, Centrum and some other brands say, okay, you've been eating iron all your life. It's stored up in your body. You shouldn't have more. It'll be bad for your heart, bad for your brain. They leave it out. But they're still overdosing people with copper. Okay? Now, have you heard about aluminum? Aluminum in the brain? This is very controversial. Researchers are still fighting about it. But I want to share with you the data. When you open the tap of water, you're drinking water. In some communities, it has aluminum in it. And in 88 county districts, there were some that were low in aluminum, and some were high. But what made headlines a long time ago was that the counties that had a lot of aluminum in their water had a lot more Alzheimer's disease, 50% more. Same thing in France. Well, there isn't any aluminum in your water in a river or in the well. It's added at the water purification plant because it precipitates out solids. And some places are really good at getting it out again, and others just sort of leave it in, and you drink it. And so people have been concerned about it. Now, there are many good neurologists who say, I don't think it matters. I think it's other things. And there are many who say, you're crazy. We should be avoiding this. Here's where I come down. I say, let them fight it out. In the meanwhile, recognize that it is in the brains of people with Alzheimer's disease. It's a clear-cut neurotoxin, because we see this in industrial accidents. When people get too much aluminum, it's a clear-cut, it causes brain damage. And also, there is zero requirement for it. You need a little iron, a little copper. Your body does not need one scrap of aluminum. So I say, let's skip it. Well, where is it? It can be in your drinking water. Your local water department will tell you. And if you're unsure, you can get those big tanks of water delivered to your house, or a reverse osmosis filter will take it right out. Very easy. Aluminum pots and pans, don't use them unless the cooking surface is coated with something. You can buy some baking powder at the store that has aluminum. That one is right next to it, costs the same, and has none. Very easy. You can get a pizza that often has aluminum in the crust or in the cheese. It's written right in the ingredients. The little single-serve salt things at fast food chains, they have aluminum added so that it pours when it's humid. My dad had an acid stomach. He always had his bottle of Maalox. And at some point, I found myself wondering, what does Maalox mean? It means magnesium, aluminum, hydroxide. You're just drinking aluminum all day long. If he had bought Tums instead, they don't have aluminum. Very simple. If you use a deodorant, it has no aluminum. If you use an antiperspirant, it has aluminum that does pass the skin into the blood. So let other people fight it out. I suggest you just stand back, know where they are, and if aluminum turns out to be fine 30 years from now, fair enough. Okay. Now, what I have been saying is that metals cause free radicals to form in the brain, and these are like sparks that singe through the brain. We need a fire extinguisher. We need to put out those sparks, and we've got one. It's called vitamin E. Vitamin E. Vitamin E is in spinach, it's in mangoes, it's in especially nuts and seeds, and it's an antioxidant. Knocks out free radicals. Now, some people in Chicago eat these things, and some people don't. So the researcher said, if this theory is correct, if it is true that metals go into the brain, oxidize, cause free radicals to form, if that's true, then people who eat a lot of vitamin E ought to be protected. They should have less Alzheimer's risk, and I want to show you the numbers. Let's see. Exactly. The people with low vitamin E intake, the people who are not eating their spinach, are at higher risk, more than twice as high, compared to the people who are eating it. So all we're doing is we're just adding up things that can protect us. Very, very simple things to do. But one thing about vitamin E is it's in these foods, broccoli, spinach, sweet potatoes. There's lots of it in nuts and seeds. However, there are 8 different forms in nature. I can sell you a pill legally with just one of those forms. And sometimes when you overdose a patient with one form of a vitamin, it stops others from being absorbable. And so the pills don't seem to work. So foods have 8 forms. And the Chicago study, all that you needed was 8 milligrams, real easy. And an ounce of nuts or seeds gives you 5. Very easy. By the way, be careful about this. Did you know that there is heroin in cashews? Well, there may not be heroin in them, but for some reason, I find that when I open the pack and after I eat them, I want them again. And do any of you have this problem, or am I the only one? They are somehow addicting, and they're pretty fatty too. So you want to be careful about that. So here's my trick, is an ounce of nuts or seeds, that's one handful, small handful. So you pour them in your hand, and by the time it hits your fingers, that's more than an ounce. Then don't eat them, crumble them up, and put them on your salad or on your oatmeal. Use them as an ingredient, not as a snack food. So don't shovel them in, just put them on things, and that will stop you from overdoing it on the nuts, okay? All right, now this is for extra credit. Your brain is working all day long, and it makes this compound called homocysteine. This won't be on the test, but homocysteine is factory waste. In a factory, factories make waste products, and your body makes homocysteine. The problem with it is it's damaging to you in the same way as waste products could, you know, exhaust and things like that can damage a factory. So your cardiologist or your doctor knows homocysteine is bad for your heart. It's bad for your brain. We've got to shovel it out of your body. How do I do that? Well, first of all, the test is really easy to do. Every doctor in America knows how to test homocysteine. And the way they get rid of it is with three vitamins. Three vitamins. These are shovels that get it out of your body. Folate. Folate is a B vitamin, and it's in leafy greens. Think of foliage. Foliage, green leaves. Folate. It's a B vitamin. B6 is in beans and bananas, and B12 is actually the one vitamin that should come from a supplement. It's actually more absorbable as a supplement than it is in food. But researchers at the University of Oxford did an interesting thing. They brought in a group of people, and they gave them pills that had the B vitamins in them, and others got a placebo, a dummy pill. Didn't do anything. And as years went by, 2 years, they showed the placebo people got worse and worse and worse. And these were all people who had mild cognitive impairment to start with, so this is not good. But the people who got the vitamins, and it started getting rid of that homocysteine that's damaging the brain, their memory started to improve over time. And then they did MRIs of the brain, the imaging of the brain. This is looking down from above. Now, the size of this hole, that doesn't matter. That's just a normal ventricle that allows this fluid to go from the brain to the spinal cord. What matters is, can you see that bluish lining? This is a special technique, MRI technique, that shows the atrophy over time. This person had the misfortune of being assigned to the placebo group, had a high homocysteine level that didn't go down, and had 2.5% atrophy every single year. After a decade, you're talking very serious brain atrophy. But here's another person who, again, the size of this isn't what matters so much. The size of this, what matters is there's much less blue. This was a person who was taking the B vitamins. Atrophy was cut to about 0.5% per year. Much better, okay? So, all right, I get it. You're talking about get away from the bad fats and the trans fats and eat the vitamin-rich foods, healthy things. Sounds like the Mediterranean kind of approach. And that's true. People living in Mediterranean countries, they're not eating that big hunk of steak. These are people who know a chickpea when they see one, and they eat generally a much healthier lifestyle than other people do. And they also drink some wine. Researchers have pointed out that wine drinking is beneficial. When I was in college, some of my roommates fancied that they were in the Mediterranean diet. But surprisingly enough, daily wine consumption of about a glass of wine reduces Alzheimer's risk a lot. So researchers at the University of Cincinnati said, wait a minute, I don't think we want to recommend that because alcohol increases breast cancer risk, and if it's more than a drink a day, it causes all kinds of problems. That's not a good way. What if it's not the alcohol? What if it's the grape that does it? So here's what they tested. Grape juice. They brought in a group of people. The average age was 78 years old. Everybody had mild cognitive impairment. Everybody was having trouble remembering where they left their car keys. And all they tested was grape juice. And here's what they did. They gave them a pint a day. That's 2 cups. Their learning improved. Their recall improved in 3 months. Wait a minute. That's ridiculous. How could that be? 3 months to get a measurable improvement? Why? Well, think about it. A grape has a rough life. A grape has to sit on a vine all day long with no sunscreen. And the sun beats down. Why doesn't it shrivel up on day one? The reason why is because it has what are called anthocyanins, which are powerful antioxidants that happen to be colored purple. And there are a variety of colors of them in nature. And so the researcher said, well, wait a minute. Those antioxidants that protect the grape, when you eat them, when you eat the juice or the grape, they pass into your blood. And there'll be antioxidants for you too. And the grape isn't unique. Let's try other things that have anthocyanins. So back into the laboratory, blueberries. They brought in a new group of people. They were all had mild cognitive impairment, a pint a day of blueberry juice. Same story. Better learning, better recall. And think about this. When you go into the produce department at the store, there is nothing redder than a ripe tomato. That happens to be the antioxidant lycopene that you're seeing. But it screams its color out at you. And an orange carrot or an orange sweet potato, that's beta carotene. Or the anthocyanins. These are tremendously bright colors. Aren't they pretty? Well, wait a minute. They're not just pretty. The human retina evolved to detect them. The human retina evolved to be able to understand where antioxidants are at a distance of 100 yards. If you brought your cat to the produce department, your cat is a meat eater. Your cat does not recognize antioxidants, can't see them. Your cat can detect the fish counter. A dog has tremendous sense of hearing, can hear at frequencies that we can't detect, can smell things so acutely that they're hired by the TSA. You know, human beings obtain the ability to detect antioxidants because they are good for us, and people who did not have that ability died out. And the retina became so acute that we now are attracted to these things because they're beautiful. There's nobody who ever said, oh, those colors, I can't walk in there. No, we are all attracted to them. But what do we do now? We take those colors and we put them in an M&M's bag. And our kids aren't interested in tomatoes and carrots and grapes or anything anymore. All right, am I wrong? Is this making sense? Okay, so the healthiest foods are simple foods. Fruits, grains, what are legumes? Legumes? Beans. Beans, peas, lentils, that's right, and vegetables. Those are the four staples of life. Who eats that way? Well, this is Okinawa. Okinawa is an area right at the very bottom of Japan. And researchers have studied Okinawa because people live to be 100 there very frequently. The dietary staple in Okinawa is not fish. It's not rice. It's sweet potatoes. Huge amounts of sweet potatoes. This is a friend of mine in the middle of this slide. Her name is Masu. My friend lives in the U.S. This is her mother, Masu. Masu lives in Okinawa, and she eats a lot of sweet potatoes. And there she was back in the 1950s or 60s. There she is at age 88. There she is at 100, digging up her sweet potatoes. These are very simple foods. By the way, they do throw you a party when you get to be 100. But unfortunately, you have to share it with all the other people turning 100. This is Dr. Ellsworth Wareham. And Dr. Wareham was on an American destroyer sailing right past Okinawa in World War II. And he didn't know Masu, but he ate almost identically to the way she ate. Why? Because he grew up on a farm in Alberta. And they would send him into the barn to milk the cows. And he would come back in a little while later with a bucket and he would set it down. And they would say, Ellsworth, why don't you have some milk? And he would say, no, thank you. They said, well, why not? And he'd say, it doesn't seem very hygienic to me. And he was a very fastidious young man, and he had seen what it takes to milk a cow, and he thought it was kind of dirty, and he didn't want to eat it. And then they would say, well, go out and get eggs. And that was even worse. So very early in life, Ellsworth Wareham became a vegetarian, and he ate simple foods. He would eat beans and potatoes, but he didn't want the meats and the animal products. But what was remarkable about him, he became a surgeon. Very well-known surgeon. And he did a tour of duty in Vietnam and led quite a team that was brought to the White House to be decorated by first Lyndon Johnson. There he is on the right of President Johnson. And again by President Nixon. There he is on Nixon's left. But what was most remarkable about Dr. Ellsworth Wareham was that when he hit 65, he didn't retire. He said, I'm feeling pretty good. And his numbers were great. Everything, he was healthy as could be and a terrific surgeon. And he hit 70 and 75. And he said, this is ridiculous. I've got to tell you, if I hit 95, I'm retiring for sure. That's what he did. At age 95, Dr. Ellsworth Wareham retired. And the other surgeon said, where are you going? You can't leave. You've got steady hands. You've got a good mind. You've got more experience than all the rest of us put together. And he said, wait. Patient finds out the surgeon's 95. That's not like a big confidence builder, guys. I got to go home. So anyway, I had lunch with Dr. Wareham not too long ago. He's not quite 100. And he gets up every morning, and he goes out into his backyard, and he does surgery all over his garden. So he's got the most well-kept garden you've ever seen. So the point being, there's something to be said for these humble, simple, unprocessed foods that come out of the ground and scream color and health to you. And people who take advantage of them do very well. Okay, if I do that, are there extra benefits? Well, as a matter of fact, what if I'm avoiding those bad fats because I want to protect my brain? Well, this will be on the test. 1 gram of fat has 9 calories. A gram is about a third of a thimbleful. But a gram of carbohydrate has only 4. So if I'm avoiding fats for health, I'm avoiding a lot of calories. I want to show you a picture. This is a man named Jean Remy, who lives in Canada. He sent me these pictures because he was 320 pounds. And his doctor said, you've got prediabetes, you're not healthy at all, you're in trouble. And his wife, as fate would have it, happened to have a copy of a book I wrote about diabetes. And the book does not say, don't eat potatoes. The book says, avoid the sources of bad fats. Don't eat meats and dairy products, but eat all you want of the healthy foods. He did that. By the time he got to chapter 4, he had lost 160 pounds. And his energy came back. This is Jenna, same story. She wanted to lose some weight because she didn't feel good about herself. Not by starving or avoiding carbohydrate, but she avoided the bad fats, the animal products. And she got her waistline back and got her health back. She got her confidence back. We see this every day in our research center in Washington, D.C. Now, exercise counts too. Very important. At the University of Illinois, researchers brought in a group of people and they said, we want you to take a brisk walk. Get your heart pumping 3 times a week. And it reversed brain shrinkage. Especially in this part of the brain called the hippocampus, which is Latin for? Who's had their asparagus today? Very good. Okay. All right. And it actually measurably improved their memory. Think about it. If you're exercising, your heart gets pumping, the oxygen goes up to the brain, the nutrients go to the brain, the waste gets pulled out. It measurably increases that part of the brain. So I have my exercise tips that I would like to share with you. Arrive at the airport as late as possible. Carry massively heavy luggage. Just run for the plane. I do this every day or two. And I think it would help you as well. That's not what these researchers did. What they did was started with a 10-minute walk 3 times a week. Next week, 15. Next week, 20. 25, and once you hit 40 minutes, that's it. You can do more. It's good to do more. But 40 minutes of brisk walking 3 times a week has been shown in research studies to reverse brain shrinkage. Very easy. And by the way, I got to tell you something. There is researchers in Canada showed that people who have 2 languages do better. It actually delays cognitive decline by about 5 years. Now, why is that? Because I've got 2 words for everything. I'm using things. Now, your high school French is no good unless you're using it now. And that's why every week I talk to my friend Jacqueline by phone, and I'm building up my brain for French. And you can do this in any way you want to. And it's also fun. So using your brain is a great way to go. So mental activities, intellectual activities, documentaries, newspapers, and make it a good newspaper. Something. Crosswords, anagrams, things that relate to foods are really very, very good for you. Okay. By the way, I was sitting in a lecture by Dr. Dean Ornish. Do you know Dean Ornish? Medical genius. He showed a plant-based diet reverses heart disease, opens the arteries up again. But he showed this slide. And he said, if I focus on myself. If I focus too much on I will be ill. But if I focus on the group, on we, I will be well. And he was making a good point that we need support. But while he was making that very good point, I got wrapped up with something completely different, which is there are words hidden inside other words. And you can take all kinds of words and you can rearrange them, and it's amazing to see what you come up with. So I'm convinced that this is probably good for my brain. So anyway, there are, take this on faith, okay? There are companies that make a science of this. Do you know Lumosity? They make these little video games, but they help you to improve your processing speed, your memory, and your reasoning. Hi, David. Last time you were here, you ordered such and such, and if you remember, you get points. Or how many words begin with D-I-G? Okay? Simple. 5 minutes a day. Very easy. Okay? Now, the most important thing, whether we're talking about physical activity or cognitive activity, you must stop. It's important to stop. Got to go to sleep. Because the brain cannot work 24 hours a day. It needs downtime. And at the first half of the night, you have your brain, if I put EEG leads on your brain is engaged in slow wave sleep. And while that's happening, your brain is filing away the experiences of the day, the things you've learned. These file folders that have been stacking up are getting put away. The second half of the night, REM sleep, you're dreaming. And dreams have emotions. You're integrating emotions. What if I'm up all night? Next day, I can't remember things. My memory is poor, and my emotional control is poor. I'll be grouchy or giddy, or you'll go back and forth between the two. So it gets worse. Remember that sausage maker that's cranking out the amyloid protein? That stops at night. It's on a circadian rhythm. It goes way, way down at night, except if you stay up, if you're awake, it turns back on. And you're making more amyloid protein day by day or hour by hour during the night. So go to sleep. My most important medical device is this one. 10 o'clock, trust me on this, 10 o'clock, just whatever, however great the book is you're reading, close it, go to sleep. We get up the next morning and you're going to feel lots better. Wait, there's more. This is Dr. Dwayne Gravlin. I want to show you his picture because he not only is a physician, but he was a NASA astronaut in training. Got home from work one day, drove into his driveway. There was a woman standing there. Didn't recognize her, and he asked her what she was doing and if he could help her. And she looked at Dwayne, and it became pretty clear in a couple minutes that Dwayne did not recognize his own wife. After a brief discussion, they got into the car, and they drove to the emergency room, and they were trying to figure out how Dr. Dwayne Gravlin had lost his memory. The only thing they could figure out was this. He had started a prescription for atorvastatin, that's Lipitor, cholesterol-lowering drug, and they decided to stop it. And as the days went by, his memory returned, but so did his high cholesterol. So he started it again at half the dose, and within a month, his memory was wiped out. Nothing after age 13 was left. And so they threw that away. His memory gradually worked its way back, and he went to the FDA. He said, I think you need to know this. And they said, well, ridiculous. We know if there's one safe drug we have, it's Lipitor. It lowers cholesterol very effectively, and it does. Of course, it does have muscle side effects and liver side effects, and it does increase your risk of diabetes and cataracts, but other than that, it's safe. As time went on, hundreds of cases of memory problems linked to Lipitor have come to light, and the FDA now acknowledges it. But don't get me wrong. Lipitor is generally a safe drug, and it does lower cholesterol. And this problem is rare. Having said that, 90% of people taking Lipitor do not need it. What I mean is, I don't mean they didn't have high cholesterol. What I mean is they are being treated for their diet. The cholesterol that's in their blood would not be there if they were eating vegetables and fruits and whole grains and beans and avoiding the animal products. We have a culture that says, let's just pig out all that stuff and the doctor is going to come behind you with a prescription to try to clean it up as best as possible. The other 10% really are making more cholesterol no matter what they eat, and I think you can make a good case for them having it. But we would have a lot fewer side effects if we had a healthier diet. And it's not just that. There are a number of drugs that can cause this problem, and all I suggest is that when a person has an acute change in mental status, the first thing the doctor should think about and the first thing the family should think about is marching into the bathroom, throwing open the medicine cabinet, and seeing what is in there. Because medicines cause problems and medicines add up. The first one's safe, the second or third anticholinergic acting together can cause serious problems, okay? Again, medicines have a role, but things should be switched. As Anwar and I were talking about the other day, right now, conventional medicine says, you got a high cholesterol? Let me write you a prescription. An alternative would be a vegan diet. Wait. I don't have a Lipitor deficiency. So what we ought to do is deal with a diet-related disease in the opposite way, with a diet change first, and whatever support and information that you need to conquer that problem. And for those people where a diet change isn't enough, then use medicines as alternative when the conventional approach of a nutritional change didn't succeed. That's the kind of medicine that we ought to be having. All right, medical, thank you. And you know what, if we did that, I have to say, if we did that, doctors would have Wednesday afternoons off. We'd have such healthy patients. And there are a lot of medical conditions that can cause these problems as well. So just putting everything together, I'm checking my scorecard. Can I avoid bad fats? Can I? Sure. Can I avoid excess metals? Now that I know where they are, can I have vitamin-rich foods like vegetables and fruits? Sure I can. Can I have vitamin B12 every day? That's simple. Can I be physically active? Sure. Can I be mentally active? We're doing that already. Can I get some sleep? Well, yes. Can I be careful about medicine? Sure you can. Okay, so the power plate. This is what people should be eating for health. And in 2009, we, PCRM, sent this to the federal government. And we said, the pyramid is a nice shape, but people eat off a plate. Give them a plate. And we sent this to them in 2009. We petitioned them to accept it. Did you see what they came out with in 2011? They call it My Plate. This is official U.S. government policy. This is not what I sent them. But it's close. We're making progress. Okay, so what I have just suggested is that the healthiest diet doesn't have animal products at all. It doesn't have meat in it. It doesn't have dairy products. It's got these healthy, simple foods. And you might say, okay, I'll believe you. But if I eat that way, I'll have to live in the garage. My family's going to divorce me. I'm not even sure I could do it. So the last thing I want to share with you is how we give this to patients that come to see us. Because I have never seen anyone who can't do it. Step one, don't change your diet. Take just a week, 2 weeks, and think about foods that you like to eat but that are totally healthy. And I give everybody a list. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack. I say, go home, fill in things that are plant-based that you like, and come back to see me in a week. And so they think, okay, breakfast, oatmeal. If I put some cinnamon and raisins on it, it's actually okay. Blueberry pancakes, cornflakes, I can put cow's milk, soy milk, rice milk, hemp milk, almond milk. Okay, so they're working it out. Same thing for lunch. You're just filling out your list with things to see what you like. There are lots of recipes for you, and you just try them. And if you're going out to an Italian place, could you get a plant-based meal at an Italian restaurant? Could you? What would they bring you? What would they serve you? Okay, all right, well, we'll start with maybe a nice salad and maybe some pasta e fagioli or lentil soup or minestrone. And then when my angel hair pasta comes, it's topped with artichoke hearts and seared oyster mushrooms and chunky tomatoes and lots of spice if I want it, and I guess I can have the espresso afterwards. That's from the bean group. How about Mexican cuisine? Can I do it Mexican style? Would that work? I could. What could I have? Bean burrito? Okay. Veggie fajitas? Beans? All right, that's too easy. Chinese. Could I do it Chinese? What could I get at a Chinese restaurant that's plant-based, no meat, no shrimp on it? What could I get? Okay, all right, rice dishes, vegetable dishes, I could get tofu, okay. Extra points for Japanese, There's some pretty good Japanese restaurants right here in this town. And extra points because they are very low in oil, too. They'll make you vegetable sushi, make you edamame miso soup. It's really nice, creative things. Now, some of your patients might be at Subway, right? So they'll leave off the cheese and meat if you ask. And they'll fill a sandwich full of lettuce, tomatoes, onions, olives, spinach, cucumbers, red wine, vinegar. They'll toast it for you. Let's call it veggie delight. This is not the pinnacle of culinary art, but at the same time, if that's where you're eating now, what's the best thing there? Skip the meat taco, have the bean burrito, hold the cheese. Okay. So all I'm doing is I'm taking my list and I'm filling it out with the plant-based options for every meal. And then when you're ready, take 3 weeks and do it 3 weeks all plant-based, all vegan, all the time as a test. You're driving this car around the block just to see if you like it. And after 3 weeks, two things will have happened. The first is you're healthier. Weight's coming down, energy's going up. If you had digestive problems, those are gone. If you have diabetes, your numbers are improving. In some cases, so much, your doctor is already backing off on your medicine. By the way, this is not a weak diet. This is very powerful. So if you have diabetes or hypertension or you're on medicines, tell your doctor you're going to do it and have your doctor's number, because your doctor may well have to back you down on medicines because they are now because you don't need them or you don't need so much. Okay? So you're going to physically be healthier. But the second thing is you'll discover that your tastes are changing. And you don't expect that. But let me ask this group. How many of you ever switched from whole milk to skim milk? Let me see hands. How many switched to skim milk? What was it like at first? Watery? Didn't even look right? How many of you got used to the taste? Okay. Did you ever go back? You ever taste the whole milk again? What was that like? Whole milk. If you haven't had whole milk in a while, it tastes pretty creamy, doesn't it? It's too thick. Well, your whole life it was fine, but when you get away from it, you discover that your taste buds change, and they don't want that greasy taste anymore. And so nobody's going to tempt you with whole milk, you know, once you've gotten away from it. The first week on a vegan diet, it seems too light. It does. You're going to say, I guess I got to acquire a taste for folk music now. Break out the tie-dye guys. Swell. Bring me some philosophy books. Well, it's great. Well, I got to tell you, after about week two, it starts to make sense. You discover that there are cool restaurants that do this. And you read an article about Bill Clinton, that he's doing vegan and how good it's been for him. And Serena Williams is at the top of the tennis world, and she's doing a plant-based diet. And Ellen DeGeneres and all these people are doing it. And you discover, I kind of like this. I like how I feel. And then after 3 weeks, if you went back and had a double bacon cheeseburger and you take a bite, you just discover you are just past it. This food seems so pedestrian. And you've discovered things that are much more exciting. So there are what I call transition foods, if you want. Instead of a hamburger, there is a veggie burger. Instead of Jimmy Dean pork sausage, there is Gimme Lean vegan sausage. You don't have to have these, but they're there. They'll hold your hand if you want.